Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, what is science and where did it come from? The unusual Christian roots of the scientific revolution. Also, a courageous governor in Montana. And I really haven't weighed in on this topic very much, but the topic of global warming and climate change from a reasonable perspective is something that we talk about in this episode. It's a lot of fun. And in fact, some people have said it's one of their favorite episodes we have done lately. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program and keep us growing and reaching young people, maybe you say to yourself, I want to make a difference. Maybe you are blessed with a lot of resources. Maybe you have a lot of money and you want to help give back to the next generation. Well, charliekirk.com/support is your place to do that. I want to thank Ryan for supporting us from Riverview, Florida. I want to thank Celeste from Irvine, California for supporting us. Thank you. I want to thank Tong from Phoenix, Arizona. I want to thank Jody from Colorado Springs, Colorado. At charliekirk.com/support, we are able to grow, hire staff, travel, go live and cut these podcasts for you two a day when you guys support us at charliekirk.com/support. And if you become a monthly supporter, you get an opportunity to be part of a supporter call where you can talk to me directly once a month at charliekirk.com/support. Science, Montana, climate change, and more. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
We are here bunkered up in Montana. I'm actually loving it. I grew up in Chicago listening to AM 560 The Answer. So this sort of weather is nothing that I'm unfamiliar with. I just spent some great time with Governor Gianforte, who's doing an amazing job for Montana. He signed, unlike other governors, a bill that prohibits men from competing in female sports. He signed, unlike other governors, clear and courageous pro-life legislation. Governor Gianforte has signed in protections for small businesses so that they can open up again against any sort of criticism or potential lawsuits when it comes to the Chinese coronavirus. Governor Gianforte is one of the few governors in the country that is standing up against what the leftists in Washington, D.C. are trying to do. Other governors have disappointed us in the last couple of months. Governor Gianforte signed a bill that said he will not enforce federal gun laws in the beautiful state of Montana. His mission statement is to keep Montana, Montana. And I love it. In a world where so much is changing and there's progress for the sake of progress, we as conservatives must be very clear that we stand for things that matter, things that are eternal, things that are beautiful, and we want some things to stay the same. Progress is not our strength. Progress can be detrimental. Sometimes you can progress yourself off a cliff. It was Mao Zedong who famously argued for the great leap forward. The eyes to the sky, the gaze to the heavens is a famous imagery of the Marxists and the communists. It's this idea that we must always be looking for the next thing. We must always be pushing the boundaries of what human beings are able to do. So we as conservatives must be very clear that sometimes we want things to stay the same. We want the family to stay intact. We want gender roles to be protected. And you want to keep Montana, Montana. You don't want the radicals from Seattle or Portland to come into Bozeman or come into Billings and be able to impose their beliefs on a state that works and a state that is the envy of so many others. And what's happening in Montana is an example of the great squeeze we've talked about all across the country. This top-down revolution of the most powerful people in the country that are using their power, their wealth, to try to crush normal people. You see, there's something that bothers the ruling class about Montana. They don't like the fact that they own guns, that they care about their local church, their local small business, that they're a little bit skeptical about Amazon and Walmart and these mega corporations running the entire country. And so because of that, they want to execute the great squeeze. They want to try and disenfranchise the people of Montana through mass immigration from other states. And yes, mass immigration into our country. And so if you actually go down to the fundamental word conservative, we want to conserve things that work, things that are eternal, things that are beautiful. And that includes what I'm looking at here as the winter wonderland on the 21st of May here in Montana. And that's exactly what Governor Gianforte is doing. On every single issue that matters to conservatives, he has excelled and succeeded. Critical race theory. He has required now the Pledge of Allegiance, and civic education is back into the schools in Montana. He's been the best on the Second Amendment of any single governor in the country. He has lifted the mask mandate all across the state of Montana. I actually saw the face of my waiter here in Montana. It was actually a very interesting thing. And so when we look at who's actually doing a good job, and I've been very critical of Governor Burgum of North Dakota. I've been very critical of, it's a guy from Arkansas name. It's not a name worth remembering. The corporate guy. Asa Hutchinson. That's him. The Walmart guy who decided that he thought that it was a good idea to allow children to chemically castrate themselves. We have been lifting up Governor DeSantis, and we should, but we should also lift up some of these other Republican governors. The few, the proud, that have decided to play offense. The only way to deal with the situation at hand is to play offense. The only way to deal with this cultural blitzkrieg that we have been living through and we've been experiencing is to actually take terrain, is to show people why we believe what we believe. And maybe Montana will become less attractive to the California leftists and Democrats the more policies that we implement. All of a sudden, when California says, you know what, we're going to take stances on the transgender deal. We're going to allow campus carry. We are going to allow businesses to fully reopen. And we are going to stop the unemployment benefits, which, by the way, is a huge problem across the country. We are subsidizing inactivity, and we have a labor crisis in our country made possible because of an overreaching federal government that has decided to subsidize people not working when we need to get people back into work and having fulfilling wages and jobs that are able to provide for their family. And so this goes to a deeper point of why people rose up in record numbers last November and where the Republican Party needs to lean in on this. People are afraid things are changing too quickly. Landscapes are changing. Families are changing. Gender roles are changing. Language is changing. Newspeak is the new language of the ruling class. Our racial relations are changing. Our media is changing. Our corporations are changing. And so are Republicans going to be the party that says we could change things better than the Democrats? No. Instead, conservatives and Republicans should, as demonstrated by Ron DeSantis and Greg Gianforte, say, we got elected to preserve the beautiful and to not allow the parasites from some of these other states to infect and destroy our beloved state, our communities, or our families. This is a different type of conservatism, by the way. The conservatism that existed 10 years ago was a progressive conservatism. It was a, hey, our idea of social change is we're going to bring in a bunch of plastic from China and you're going to like it. We're going to bring in another 100 million Ilhan Omars into our country and you're going to like it. Progressive conservatism is this idea that we are going to play into the historicist lie of Hegel and somehow we are going to be able to, for the sake of progress, just because it's a word that we're supposed to like, play into this. Now, of course, some things we should make progress on, obviously. We should try to end the scourge of abortion in our country. We should try and do everything we possibly can to make things in our country again. But whenever you say the word again, is it really progress or is it restoration? You see, progress, this word that we have decided to fall in love with, think progress, or we must always be moving forward, is a very dangerous thing because the more you indulge in it, the more you're actually declaring war on human nature. The more you're saying is human beings are malleable, put us in charge, remove the guardrails, give us a bunch of power, and we are going to remake America in the image that we see fit. And conservatives need to be very clear. Hold on a second. There are institutions that work, institutions that are moral, like the family, like having children, like attending church, like middle-class work, like small businesses, rejecting a corporate oligarchy, enjoying the natural, beautiful landscape like we see in Montana. And we should be unapologetic of defending them against those that wish to change things for the sake of change, because they're either bored, devoid of purpose, or their purpose is to always impose their beliefs on others. So I just want to give a hat tip to my friend, Greg Gianforte. He's doing a phenomenal job. We need more governors like him. And if you're in Montana, or if you're just looking to give just a little bit of an encouraging note, do that to Governor Gianforte. He's doing a great job. Trust the science. How many times have we heard that over the last year? An incantation from America's ruling class that we must trust the science. So I thought it would be helpful today to take a step back and we ask ourselves the question, what is science? Where did it come from? It's something that we teach our children, or we should. It's being just gradually, not even gradually, it's being steadily destroyed by people that are pathological in nature and basically want to use their power to try to have children believe that there's no such thing as objective truth. So where did science come from? And so we know about the scientific revolution. We know about Galileo Galilei, who famously was imprisoned for daring to question this idea that the Earth was not the center of our galaxy, instead that we revolved around the sun did not revolve around us. The scientific revolution was largely a phenomenon thanks to one of my all-time favorite human beings, Sir Francis Bacon. So the question should be, time out a second, why is it that the scientific revolution came as late as the 1600s? Now, there were people that were making discoveries before the scientific revolution. For example, the Indian culture, the Indus River Valley, they famously discovered the concept of zero, which is not a small discovery. There were many people that were in ancient culture that, let's say, were in astrology. They tried alchemy, which is turning something into gold. And they did math. But there was something that happened in the 1500s and 1600s that birthed what is now known as the scientific revolution. You see, prior to the Christians really taking science seriously, largely because of Thomas Aquinas, who famously argued that Christians should be unafraid to use reason as a way to support their faith, math and the inquiry into the natural world was never very well organized. Instead, science was kind of a offshoot exercise. It was something that was done to try and, it was either a passion project or try to achieve a greater goal. You see, but it was the Christian ethic that believed the natural world was one that we were commanded to try to exercise dominion over. Christians turned astrology into astronomy, alchemy into chemistry, and math into the language of science. Sir Isaac Newton, who is well known for writing the Principia Mathematica, he, of course, modeled orbits due to gravity. He came up with his three laws of Newtonian physics: force equals mass times acceleration, an object at rest will stay at rest, and for every action, there's equal and opposite reaction. But did you know that Sir Isaac Newton wrote more extensively about biblical prophecy, over 1 million words, more than he ever wrote about physics? What they will not teach you in school is that people of faith were actually the drivers behind the scientific revolution. In fact, a researcher by the last name of Ruster made a all-star type list of the top 52 scientists that pioneered the scientific revolution. He found that 50 of 52 were Christians and 60% of them were devout, who did their science for the glory of God. So what is science? Science is an inquiry into the mastery of the natural world. Science is a question in the development of scholarship that allows us through empirical and theoretical and practical knowledge to be able to make sense of everything around us, of real world phenomena. And because of that, this idea of the scientific method was born, thanks to Sir Francis Bacon. It was always something that was supposed to be against the ideologues, against people that came with a certain belief. It was always supposed to be empirically driven, not by people that wish to have a certain outcome. Now, I have recently had a little bit of a, let's just say, tussle with people who call themselves scientists. Science, as we know it, was large in part thanks to what will now be known as medieval Christianity. Before it, there were people that were doing one-off discoveries, and the Greeks had a different view of the natural world, which is largely why they never actually created institutions that were solely focused on science. And I can already hear the chattering class, and Aristotle had the Lyceum, and he was as close to a scientist as one could get. But you see, the Greeks had a different view of the cosmos. The Bible argued that there was a definitive beginning of the universe, and that the cosmos were not eternal. Only God is eternal. That is the difference between a Greek theological view and a traditional biblical, a Jewish or Christian view of God. So therefore, once Christians started to become interested in the natural world, into the material world, there started to become momentum around this. This is also why Eastern cultures, specifically those that practice Buddhism or the ideas of spiritual ascension, never took science very seriously. Here's why. You see, in the Buddhist principle, they believe that life is suffering. So they believe that everything around you, the material world, is the enemy, and that your spiritual ascension is the most important thing a human being can do. And this is directly at odds with a Christian view, which believes that God came into the material world, manifested himself within the material world, walked amongst it, healed it, taught in it, died in it, and then reemerged and resurrected himself in material form, not just spiritual form. And so because of this view, science as we know it, which of course is the mastery and the inquiry into the natural world through empirical and practical methods, is something that is largely thanks to the West. So as we know that now, we are being preached, we are being just talked up, all the time we are being instructed, you must follow the science. And so I gave a speech with the great Candace Owens, who was our communications director at Turning Point USA for a couple of years. And this speech must have been a couple of years ago. I don't even remember where I gave this speech with her. We traveled the country. We went from UCLA to UC Berkeley to Texas. We were all across the country. And it was a speech with Candace Owens where we were talking about global warming and climate change, which of course is basically a pseudo-religious belief amongst the collectivists. There's a lot of things you're allowed to talk about. You are not allowed to talk about global warming at all. And our position was very clear. It was basically an agnostic position. Agnostic coming from two Greek words, ag and gnosis, without knowledge. We were saying we don't know enough to be able to say that we want to massively redefine the American economy and with it the global economy, because we have some questions. And so this organization of apparatchiks, it's a website, climatefeedback.org. It says, quote, in viral video, Turning Point USA, Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk falsely claim there's no evidence of global warming. We never said that. And scientists don't know the cause. We did say that. And so what we did say is that there were rising global temperatures, but we don't know what the cause of those global temperatures are. We said that it very well might not be human activity. We said that it could be solar sunspots or natural activity. It could be a variety of different things outside of just human activity or carbon emissions. Now, very few people even know what our energy grid looks like. Currently, we have 30% of our energy consumption as oil globally, 28% as coal, 22% as natural gas, 3% as hydropower, and 6% as nuclear. Now, obviously, they want to reduce this, and without even talking about who the largest energy consumer in the world is, the Chinese, and 59% of all Chinese energy comes from burning coal. Most people don't know that. And so all of this is really around this idea of war on fossil fuels, and we'll get back to science. I just want to frame this correctly, which is the world uses about 100 million barrels of oil a day, and fossil fuels provide 99.5% of all the energy used in transportation. And so if you look at America's energy grid, about 11% are renewable energy, 11% coal, 8% nuclear power, which again, the left doesn't want, 37% petroleum, and 32% natural gas. And so you look at what the activists are really focused on, and you're not allowed to say any of this, of course not. But the Earth's climate has changed many times over the last 12,000 years. There are these things called interglacial cycles. And so according to the Utah Geological Survey, there have been ebbs and flows, increases and decreases of global temperatures over the last 450,000 years. And we are in now a interglacial period. And if you look at just some of these ups and downs, for example, 200,000 years ago, according to the Utah Geological Survey, global temperatures were around 15 degrees Celsius on average, and now they're around 33 degrees Celsius. That was 200,000 years ago. So we have evidence to show that temperatures went up absent of human activity. So it's a natural question to ask, is what we are experiencing now, slight rise in global temperatures, 1 degree Celsius over the last 100 years, is this because of increased carbon emissions, or are we part of a broader interglacial period? And then let's just ask the question, are there any positives to what is happening now? So we are 2,000 years past the average of 10,000 years. Now, glacial periods mean less plant growth and things get more cold. Glacial periods mean that the oceans will absorb more CO2, carbon dioxide. And glacial periods last about 90,000 years. So just so we're clear, the Earth was warmer during the Roman and medieval warm periods. Let me say that again. The Earth was warmer during the Roman and medieval periods. And now this is according to HAL INSU archives, and I'll cite all this on charliekirk.com. So these scientists don't like it when you just ask some very simple questions, which is, can you attribute to what is happening right now to more human activity? Well, did you know that the world is greener than it ever has been? Do you know that we have more greenery on the face of the earth than ever before? This is according to NASA. And 8 billion people are better fed today because the world is greener. Doomsayers and people that wished that, or they wished, they thought the world was going to end, never thought that was going to happen. In fact, the fact that our world is greening everywhere, it includes grasslands and deserts. And that means that there's higher than expected CO2 fertilization inferred from LEAF and global observations. So long term, and this is something that the scientists that run the fact-checking department don't want to talk about, that temperature and CO2 do not correlate long-term. For example, continuous temperature readings since 1659 from England show that temperatures have ups and downs, yet CO2 was constant until about 1950 when it started to climb from about 300 ppm to 415 ppm. So basically this organization, Climate Feedback, they went hard against us to try to remove our social media post. But what I just love, it's the most delicious part of this entire thing, was when they had the scientists' feedback at the end of this article at climatefeedback.org. And I laughed because of what this guy, Stephen Pochendley, who's allegedly a research scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, he quoted the IPCC, which of course we quoted some of their data as well, which I found to be just so fascinating. And I just love this quote that he uses. He says, according to the IPCC, it says, quote, it's extremely likely that human influence has been the dominant cause of observed warming since the mid-20th century. Hold on a second. Wait, hold on. Extremely likely? Is that the way we do science now? Sir Isaac Newton and Sir Francis Bacon and Galileo Galilei are spinning in their graves if this is the way we are now doing science, saying extremely likely. You see, science requires you to use the scientific method. Did you know that there are 33,000 scientists that challenge the consensus on global warming? That 31,000, I'm sorry, according to the OSSFoundation.us, 31,000 scientists say that, quote, there is no convincing evidence that humans can or will cause global warming. 31,000 scientists. And yet, according to this fact check group of activists, they are using the label of science to try to effectuate a specific political outcome. Science is under attack by activists that want things to be true because we have built this belief of science of the Bacon, Newton, Galileo tradition that we are going to be disciplined, open-minded, and show, and just wherever the observation, research, hypothesis, testing, analyzing, and reporting takes us, that's where we're going to go. And that's the scientific method, which is observation, research, hypothesis, testing, analyzing, and reporting. And the absent of inquiry into the natural world, and we just say we already have all the answers, and no matter where it takes us, we're going to go, that's not science. Just to give you a small example of how science is being corrupted, the American Medical Association, which is headquartered in Chicago, has said that they want to embed racial justice in the medical profession. They are corrupting the objective to try to achieve the subjective. Science is supposed to be absent of politics, but the left is smarter than that. They know that if they can take over the label of what scientists and science believe, then they can assume complete and power control over the country. The scientists that are running our public discourse have a lot of questions around the environment that they have not answered. And I want to thank my friend Frank Lassay, who has helped really educate so many people, including myself, on this topic. He's been terrific. Here's a question. Why has the Earth been naturally warming since about 1700 without increased CO2? Why are the activists, who call themselves scientists, alarmed when it has been warmer in the past and life was better for human beings recently during the Roman and medieval periods? What warmed and cooled the Earth in the past? Could it be a major cause today, such as the sun, volcanoes, or increased or decreased cloud cover? Wouldn't it be better to adapt to Mother Nature rather than to fight her? And what has ended prior warming interglacial periods leading to 90,000 years of glaciers? And again, we are now nearing 12,000 years into an interglacial period. Interglacial periods historically last about 10,000 years on average. And here's a very fundamental question. Is a warmer world better than a colder world for humans, plants, or animals? And at what cost are you willing to shut off a wealth-creating engine of the American economy to achieve what aim and what does success look like? These are questions that the activists who call themselves scientists refuse to answer. And what we really have here, the reason why science is under attack is the same reason that you have people say that I have my truth. No, there is only the truth that you can prove. And science has always been a place where your ideology, your preferences, your pathology gets checked at the door. And that reason is your guide. And that is no longer the case. We now have scientists making pathological and emotional arguments that have removed themselves from objective measurement using the scientific method of testing a hypothesis, And instead of answering the questions that I put forward, we have the exact opposite occurring. We have people that are using their power and at their disposal to try to stifle discussion. So they say that 97% of scientists agree on some sort of consensus on man-made global warming. What about the 3%? Galileo Galilei was imprisoned for challenging the status quo when it came to what now is known as the heliocentric theory of gravitational orbit. He was right, and he proved it. He was imprisoned for that. Dissenting voices have always been protected and taken seriously in science. And if we are now going to censor people on social media, which effectively, which this entire thing was about, sciencefeedback.org, by a near up or down vote of scientists, well, then that's not science. You see, basically here, Charlie's claim in the video is that 99% of scientists agreeing on something just makes it just an opinion. Sciencefeedback.org says that while something is true, there should be 100% agreement. Well, this is a significant misunderstanding how science works, really? By this reasoning, nothing can be known to human beings would ever be considered true. We're talking about scientists here, science feedback. Show me a scientist that does not accept force equals mass times acceleration. And prove to me the fact that man is contributing, not your little sneaky words, extremely likely. Well, back in the 1300s, the Catholic Church said that it was extremely likely that the earth was the center of the universe. When you put dogma first with no facts, your society unravels, which is what the pathological activists are doing to our country. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.